TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 620, and I'm Libya, your host. And this week, we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write reviews for Six Degrees of Geek.
This is Tom, and I chair visual media arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida, and I also host the Screen Tom podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
This is Malik B. El-Amin. I'm artistic director of Griot Theater.
All right, so in case you guys didn't know, almost all of us except for Tom are in L.A., and so we've had some events that have impacted us in this week. So Malik, you wanted to address it a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that we didn't do the podcast without recognizing what's affecting 10 plus million people living in Los Angeles, some more than others. So we know the fires have happened this past week. We know that people have lost lives, people have lost homes, and people have been generally disrupted. So whether there's a person who's personally affected or their friends or family, or just awaiting notices about whether you need to evacuate or not, we didn't want to have this podcast without just acknowledging what's going on in our city, in our county this past week. In terms of having a podcast, one of the things that we often find is that the arts and entertainment can be a way to help us recover, find our resilience, and just take our minds off of pretty terrible things that have been going on. So we are pushing forward with the podcast this particular weekend to try to help and do our part in that process of recovery and getting through.
All right. And that's also why a couple of our members are not present at the moment. And Allison is halfway present, but I understand she's halfway packed for evacuation just in case she needs to leave. So
yeah, sorry.
No reason. No need to apologize. Yeah, we totally understand and appreciate that you're here. Tom, hit us with the news. What do you got?
The news: Apple TV Plus has picked up Silo for seasons 3 and 4. So they are, at the end of the season, will be at the midpoint of the series. Bad Monkey has been picked up for season 2. There is another book, so I hope they do the book and do it justice. Sunny, however, has been canceled after just 1 season.
Good, deservedly.
Disney Plus is taking a little bit of heat. They cut a trans storyline from Pixar's Win or Lose animated series.
I heard about that.
So,
and they cut it after it had all been done.
Well, of course.
Yeah, the thing is, they were going to get screwed either way. Like, they were going to get, somebody was going to flambé them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
FX has canceled The Old Man with Jeff Bridges after 2 seasons. HBO has picked up Dune Prophecy for season 2, but they canceled the franchise after season 1. And Hulu has picked up Tell Me Lies for season 3. Max has picked up Creature Commandos for season 2. Netflix has picked up Man on the Inside for season 2. And they've canceled Girls 5 Eva again. So not all Netflix rescues missions work out. Paramount has announced that the Madison, the next Yellowstone spinoff, has added Kevin Zegers from The Rookie Feds, Rebecca Spence from Lady on the Lake, Elena Pollock from On Call, and Danielle Vazanova from 1923, which is interesting because 1923 is in the same universe. I have no idea what character she played in that, and I don't know if she's going to be playing her descendant or just somebody else. Paramount Plus picked up Mayor of Kingstown with Jeremy Renner for season 4. And even though we don't usually talk just about development deals, Peacock is developing a Grimm reboot, and they have the original creators on board, which is kind of cool.
All I was going to say is Grimm was okay. I don't need a reboot of Grimm. That, you know.
It sounds like it'll be a reboot continuation.
All right, so let's talk about the shows. First up, we're going to talk about Dune Prophecy, since now it's been renewed. We're going to talk about episodes 3 and 4, which, Tom, help me out. three and four. We talked about this already.
Yeah, we just talked about
Number three is the Dark Ops operation by House Harkonnen, where the younger sister does basically a honey trap to the Atreides family.
The whole
gets
family.
In, gets
the
to
whole
know
family.
Him,
in the
and
past.
Murders
in the past.
The whole family.
Yeah, yeah, okay, so this is the flashback episode.
Flashback.
You see them, yeah, you see them as teenagers, and you see the older sisters at the Bene Gesserit school, and she's having some conflicts with one of the older sisters to see who's in charge and stuff like that. So there's political stuff going on there. But the real story is the younger sister, like you said, doing the honey trap. Who, yeah, but what's great is you see her with her boyfriend, and you don't realize that they're Atreides for a long time. You see them all talking, hanging out, having family thing, and she's like, oh, I'm just making this brew. It's all good. And you just think that it's just one big, you know, she's getting to know the family of this guy she likes. Like, that's where you think is happening until as soon as he says Atreides, I went, oh,
like,
no. Like, I knew immediately something was wrong. Like, I did not for one second believe that she didn't know that he was an Atreides and that she was really in love with him. And it was like, I can't tell you who I am because you won't love me back. I was like, no, this is sketchy. Something's going on. But I did not predict that she was going to murder his whole family. I was like, oh, my God. That was
fantastic.
I will
say that I've been something of a critic of this series. This episode, if all of the episodes were of the quality of episode three, I'd be a fan of the series. It's of all the episodes I've watched so far, it's head and shoulders above the rest. I thoroughly enjoyed it, both from the storytelling aspect of it and the acting aspect of it. I loved how the story revealed itself. So
yeah.
I think most people watching did not realize they were Atreides. However, they gave you enough to slightly figure it out before the reveal, which is nice. It's not like I'm just putting it out there, but if you're watching and paying attention, you start to figure it out before they tell you. And then you also slightly figure out what her mission is before that's revealed. And I just love that it has that air of kind of surprise, of inevitable surprise, which is really, really strong. So I love that episode.
I like Tula better, even though she's done some really horrific things. There's something about Olivia Williams and her younger counterpart that makes her more sympathetic, whereas
yeah.
Dottie is just straight up like evil.
Yeah, well, she actually cares about, I mean, she's done all these terrible things, but it's with the understanding that she knows this is wrong.
Yes.
She carries it with her. It's a weight on her shoulders. It's a weight on her soul. Whereas her sister does things and it's like, you know, it's just
light as
a
feather.
It's,
she's
yeah,
a straight
I mean,
up
she,
sociopath.
She, exactly. She couldn't care less. So I think that it's that complexity of her character that makes this interesting. And
yeah.
Actually, you know, I think what makes this particular episode so good, and we've talked about this offline, is that it gives you more of the background of where these characters come from and what the relationship was, and what led to the situation that we have currently. And because we not only have the flashback to what happened with her and the Atreides, but we also have the flashbacks with the Harkonnens as a family
right.
on this terrible rock where they're selling like whale fur. That's their big industry. And they look like they're all going to starve or freeze to death. And their big promise for the future is the elder son who is killed, presumably, and we still don't have the final word on that, but presumably by the Atreides.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely killed by the Atreides. At least that's
I'm
the story.
I'm pretty
that
sure
everybody
he was killed by the Atreides.
Yeah,
well, because
he...
I've noticed that we haven't seen that scene yet. And I'm just, and you know, there's reasons to not trust, you know, the
Harkonnen.
About
yeah.
what happened. You know, I mean, it's just so that could have been what happened, but or it could have been something else. The fact that the Atreides were so keen, or at least her boyfriend, was so keen on just putting everything in the past and saying, yeah, we don't care about this kind of thing anymore, makes me wonder if they are in fact responsible for the brother's death. So, but you know, that hasn't been resolved, and I'm sure that they're going to address that if it turns out to be an issue in
maybe
later
seasons.
Maybe we
only have so many episodes, but maybe. But I think what's keen about what you're saying there is at least the story that we have been led to believe is that the older sister caused the brother to go after the Atreides and get himself killed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all in her kind of blind sociopathic pursuit
of power,
elevating her house.
Exactly.
Yeah, but the thing that I think you guys have all talked about is that we all wish that we had seen more of the war, the machine.
Yeah.
War.
Yes.
And the thing is, in that war, I'm going to give you a little backstory because I read those books, is that House Atreides...
The Butlerian Jihad?
Yes. House Atreides and House Harkonnen were tight. Like, the two... They ended up both being generals in the war, and they were... they started off as not trusting each other, but then for, like, 20 years, they fought side by side and were best friends. They were really, really tight, and, like, the Atreides were the godfather of the Harkonnen's kids, and, like, they were really a close group of people. But... I forgot what his first name is. Harkonnen. I forgot his first name anyway. He basically does something super selfless to save all of humanity. And he knows that because of what he does politically, it's going to be easier to write him off as a bad guy than to acknowledge the heroic thing that he does. And what's so heroic about it is that he doesn't care. He's like, I don't care what they do to my name. This is something that has to happen in order to save us all. So I'm going to do this. And he sends a letter to the Atreides, his friend, and tells him what he did. And Atreides he's like, okay, well, right now is not the time to correct this because we're in the middle of this war. But he's like, after the war, I'm going to correct it. And he really does legitimately try to correct it, but it doesn't work because it's politically easier to leave him as a traitor and as a coward. And that just becomes the history of it. And that's the tragedy of the story. But that only works if you know the whole story. And so far, the TV show has only shown us like the end of it without showing us the beginning to understand the tragedy of it. So I really want to get more of the war. I want more of that, honestly.
I think part of the problem is the show was originally called The Sisterhood, so they always wanted to squarely focus on the Bene Gesserit, which means they probably skipped through the stuff that they felt didn't have to deal with that. We can talk about overall thoughts of the season after we do 5 and 6 next podcast.
Right.
But I agree with you. This was the first episode that kind of, I was on the fence for 1 and 2. I'm like, something happened, please!
And then what happened in episode 4?
Lands rat.
The biggest kind of plot thing that happens is that some of the houses want to go after the emperor, and they use the Harkonnen family as essentially patsies.
Yep.
So they elevate the Harkonnens, which is what they want, but they elevate them in order to put them as a face to charge the emperor with crimes.
With treasons, yeah.
Yes. Meanwhile, the rebels are trying to sabotage the Landsrat by having a bomb blow up during the Landsrat.
So I have a question. So the rebels, which I understand people who are not of a house to want to because they're like, well, how come if we are not part of an elevated house of the Landsrat, how come we don't get a piece of the spice thing? How come we don't get a piece of this? Like, I get why they would rebel, but
give
why?
Give us some of the coke!
Right, but I'm like, why are Atreides in the middle of this rebellion? Like, that's why I was confused.
Well, it's only one Atreides. His house is not involved.
Yes,
that
but why
is
he
involved?
I know.
I think they haven't. I don't think that they have properly fleshed out his character, really.
No.
But I think the idea behind it is that just he sympathizes with the common man. And that we're supposed to think of him as more heroic because of that. And I would have, again, I think just like you said, we should have gotten a much earlier period of time to go through so that we understood what the dynamics were. Why does this guy, you know, side with the common people instead of just with his house?
And I think
that would have been a nice thing to have actually learned instead of just going, okay, well, I guess he just sympathizes with because
he's a tree. Of course, he's kind of a good guy.
Yeah.
Well, I think the reality is just functionally, they wanted an Atreides in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't think of a great way to get an Atreides in this part of the story. So they made the fight master.
Swordmaster, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it does feel forced, absolutely. Yeah. So you know what it does? It feels like a network note that was like, they had written the story and the network
was
like,
where's my Atreides?
Thank you. The network's like, why are there no Atreides in this story? And they're like,
so you're saying they're off book?
Yeah, like he was originally not Atreides and then they gave him that name,
well,
just,
the,
you know,
the
last
book,
minute.
The book is ends before this takes off. So the end of the war is the end of the books. And it kind of just sets up, now we have our first emperor now. Because the emperor who's emperor now, he's the third emperor. So this is out of the books. But there is a book called The Sisterhood, mm-hmm. which focuses on the sisters and not on this stuff. So, but I will give them credit in that the guys who wrote those books are getting credits in the show. So
yeah.
they are consulting.
And one of them is Brian Herbert, so and it's his dad's franchise. So.
Well, actually, I would be more Kevin Anderson, because all those books are, it says Brian Herbert and Kevin Anderson. And Kevin Anderson,
you know, Anderson is doing the heavy
he's
lifting.
He's doing the heavy lifting.
Herbert's
writing.
Just putting his name on there.
Exactly.
Give me money for my name.
Exactly. So I would be more interested in Kevin than Brian in this situation. But yeah, both of their names are on the show. And it's very much following in line of those books. So I just reread them. Just after I watched the show, I reread the book. So it's all fresh in my mind. And the next book I'm about to read is Sisterhood. So I'll see how off book the show is from Sisterhood. And let you guys know. That'll be my report. But that's all I want to say about that. Unless anybody has anything else to say about this, we're going to move on to the next show.
No, the land rat meeting does not go well because...
Right.
Emperor's secret weapon is Desmond Travis Fimmel.
It's Desmond Hart.
Desmond Hart.
Desmond Hart.
Desmond
yeah.
Hart, who I think is not in the books either. So
he is just, I don't like this character at all. I don't like the actor's portrayal of this character, and I don't like the character.
I think he's doing exactly what they want him to do, having watched the post episode thing. So,
but I don't. But
well,
it doesn't
they
work.
They. I've seen those too, and they all, you know, just go, oh, he's so great, he's so terrific, but you know, he's playing the same crazy character he plays in
everything,
and he's so over. Everyone else is pretty subtle, and he is so over the top that
yep.
he just feels like he's you know, phoning this in from another show.
Right.
But part of that's a directing problem, because they could easily,
well,
as
yes,
Lee could tell you, they could tell him, hey, bring it down, dude.
Yes, but sometimes mm-hmm. some actors, if you tell them that, they still don't do it. So I've seen that happen too.
Then they shouldn't have cast him.
I agree. That is what I am saying.
He's not that big
you
of
know,
a name.
Folks, I don't blame the actor as much as the script on his character. I think the role and the function of his character in the story doesn't make a lot of sense. And his character, we talked about before, his character is overpowered,
mm-hmm.
which makes you wonder why he even needs anybody.
Right.
I appreciate your frustrations with the actor. I'm actually more frustrated with the writing of his character and how it fits into the story. But either way, we end up in the same place, which is disappointing.
We don't like him. Yeah, we don't like
yeah,
him. So,
no.
I did like the thing at the end, like when he burns everybody, because he burned all the traitors, but then he also burned a senator. I was like, did you get permission to burn that senator? But at the end of it, he ends up bleeding all over the place. And this is the first time you see a weakness, because everything else, he's been so more powerful than everybody else. And this time he's bleeding so bad, it goes through his uniform and he kind of collapses.
And that is going to pay off in the next episode.
Well, what I loved is the Mother Superior just was like, She was very much scoping that out. So
let me skulk over here and get a blood sample.
So that was pretty good. So I'm enjoying it in that it's making me go back and reference the books and reread the books and enjoying that, and then being mad that they didn't incorporate the books. Because that's some plum. It's right there, guys. It's right there. There's a whole trilogy. You
Missed
can get.
opportunity. Yeah.
Yes. So, but I get it. The budget of showing the thinking machines to show them in their walker shells and to show the battles actually happening, that's a lot of money.
Well, there, I mean, but also that's not the scope of this story, as Tom mentioned. The jihad itself could be a whole other series, which they might have been planning on.
Right.
So you do have to choose what story you're going to tell.
Right.
That's not the story they ended up d deciding for this series.
But I also feel like if you're going to do sisterhood, let's do the sisterhood. I feel like they're trying to do a bit of both, and that's the
Yeah, well,
frustration.
they're trying to. I mean, remember that the Dune Part Two just came out last year, early part of the year. So they're trying to capitalize on things that they think will be familiar to viewers.
Right.
I would not be surprised if we get an interconnected Duneverse because we know that HBO loves its franchises.
That is true. All right, well, let's move on. I don't know. I'm still enjoying the shows. You guys are, and I get it. I have no, like, I totally understand where you guys are coming from. So, let's next up, we're going to talk about Star Wars Skeleton Crew, and we're going to do half the show because they're half hour episodes, and we're trying to get through this and catch up because we're going to have some new stuff coming in another couple of weeks. So, Star Wars Skeleton Crew, episodes 1 through 4. And the thing that I will say, because I know that a lot of our people in our group are not very big on child actors and are not, and also the last few installments of Star Wars have not been that great. So my expectations were middle
Limbo
to,
bar low.
this is not great. And
And yet
so,
you asked us to watch this show, but go
no, but I was
ahead.
gonna say, I asked you to watch it because after I saw it, I was like, oh, this was fun. It wasn't great. It's not spectacular, but I thought it was fun. I thought the kids were better than I expected them to be, and they were pretty solid. And it was a fun romp. It had they took the whole pirate motif to the 10th degree, and Jude Law chewed up all the scenery everywhere, and he's playing the character in such a way where you're pretty sure, you're 90% sure you can't trust him, but he's got that charm where you're like, well, am I sure? You know? So he's playing it exactly right. Like he's pitch perfect. And I thought the kids were all really good. So
Kids are terrific.
Yeah, they are.
I as long as you don't take it like super serious, like it's not a super serious Star Wars, it's definitely the one of the more entertaining Star Wars series
Can I
versus.
give a
Go ahead.
capsule of the premise of the
Go
show?
ahead. Go ahead.
Basically, four kids on this planet find a starship and basically get launched into space. The
Lost
problem is,
in space.
but the problem is, once they find other people, it turns out their planet is a hidden planet. So everybody's like, "Oh, what are you talking about? That planet's a myth."
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too far before divulging. Do we get to the Ad-Aden is the name of their home planet.
Yeah, we get that in the second episode.
Yeah.
But do we get to the nature of Ad-Aden? Have we gotten that far in four?
No, it's just the fact that everybody thinks that it has a hidden treasure. Like that's the myth is there's a hidden treasure on Ad-Aden. Nobody knows where it is. It's a myth. It's like Atlantis. Nobody
Yeah,
knows.
and
And
also they keep seeing those little gold credits. Yeah,
The
that
gates seem to
are
be flush with New Republic credits,
new
which of course
exactly. It's like
sparks
actually old
everybody's
Republic.
interest
It's
as they're running
old
around.
Republic credits. It's
Yeah,
old
they all
Republic
have
credits.
New Republic credits, but
They have New
they it's the
Republic
old
credits.
Republic. That's what keys everyone in. I mean, that's what makes them so valuable. Not only that they're like apparently solid gold, but that they're old Republic. So it's like their value is much higher than a
And
regular
normal,
credit.
right.
And it was a nice bit that what he was getting for lunch money for the week is like a treasure to all of these pirates. So that was a nice bit.
Yeah.
I think the most interesting thing about this series is the production design. I
Yeah.
loved the city and the houses and on Ad-Aden. I was like wanting to stop it and just look at the architecture of the homes. So I thought the production value was, I thought, the most interesting thing about this show. There are many television series and many films that are kids' films, but they also work for adults, that they're written purposefully to serve both audiences. I did not feel that that was the case here. It felt like a kids' show to me.
It does.
Space Goonies.
And so I was mostly bored and mostly, I mean, you tell a story differently when it's for kids than it's with for people who are slightly more sophisticated. And I saw very little that was intended to work on those two levels. I mean, that shows like movies like Inside Out and Up are animated films that absolutely work for adults. And I didn't see that here. So there were some interesting moments and interesting bits, interesting actors. I agree that Jude Law is really interesting in this film, and in the series.
Did you
I don't know
notice
if Jaleel White.
Urkel?
What was wrong with him? Like, he was
Yes.
trying. He was like, "Do you know who I am? You know I'm Urkel, right?" Like, he was acting, trying to draw attention to himself when that had nothing to do with what his character was doing. He was such a distraction. And not, if he's trying to move past Urkel, he didn't achieve
Did
it
not
in
work for that.
this. Yeah.
Urkel in space.
I also had a problem with the lead character's father. His
Dude,
eyeglasses were a bigger part of his character than anything else.
I don't like the parents on Atten for the most part. Carrie Condon's fine-ish, but
Yeah.
I don't like I don't and yeah, I don't like a lot of the parents.
Well, the dad, I felt like the dad, they were trying to go for distracted dad that's not paying attention to his son, and so they have a strained relationship. But I feel like the actor didn't, I don't know what that actor was
He didn't
doing.
seem like a person. He
Yeah,
seemed like
no.
an archetype.
I was gonna say he
He
was like a
was,
type rather than a fleshed
I
out
will
character.
say that, just not a very strong actor is
correct.
the problem.
I was confused by why he was cast, but I thought that the woman who
Seriously.
plays the administrator or whatever, she's
The
like
mother?
the mother. Yeah, I thought she was fine. Like
Well,
I
she's an
liked her.
Oscar nominee, so she should
Oh,
be fine.
okay then. There you go. That's why I thought she was fine. Go ahead, Allison. Go ahead.
No, I was actively avoiding this show like the plague because I am one of those people who, is very put off generally by child acting. And so as soon as I saw what this was about, it was like, okay, that's something I can avoid right now. And Livia convinced me to watch it. And I have to say, I mean, maybe because my
Bar.
thoughts on this were so, my expectations were so low. That I ended up enjoying it a lot. And Malik is absolutely right. It is geared toward
It
children. It
is.
is not in any way a show for family viewing. It's for kids. But even and I would also say that even though some of the production values are fantastic, the way that they created the world on At Atten and the city and the houses and the way everything is tricked out, and the also when they went to the
That
port, the
spaceport.
pirate port,
Yeah.
that was gorgeous. That was absolutely stunningly done. But you get those things, and then you also get like the little elephant kid who just, I mean, it's all you're staring at is this animatronic head this entire time, and it's completely distracting. And the one of the big bad guys, this Wolfman guy, is basic. He's a guy
He's literally
in
got a
a
helmet
Halloween
on. He's
mask.
got a helmet.
I mean, it's like really like a $30 Halloween mask. Why am I watching him as the big bad? I mean, he should be a
The
he's a
big
big bad. There you
bad
go. But he should be a background character with a head like that. If they're going to have a big bad character, they should have something that looks really good, that really comes
I
up to
will
snuff. And
agree.
this so did
Okay.
not.
I will agree
So it's
with
a
you on
mixture of
that.
stuff.
I will agree. Go ahead.
I think on some levels they do things that I really like. I love Nick Frost as this crazy pirate robot that they
Robot.
have
Oh, he's so
running
good. He's
around.
already three.
With the weasel-like creature that
That
pops
comes
in
out
and
of
out
his
of his
God, that keeps coming out of his eye.
eye.
All of that was terrific, and he's and the CGI on the robot is wonderful. All of that is great. But you get those things, and then you get other things that don't work. So it's like it's
Well,
this mix of stuff.
I want to talk about Jude Law real quick, which is I liked how his character, when we meet him, the kids are like, oh my God, he's a Jedi. And I like that at no point does he actually say he's a Jedi. And we get
Nope.
through a couple episodes. I was like, wait, he never said he was a Jedi. And then when they catch him, he's like, well, I never said I was a Jedi. And I was like, that's a very true
You didn't
statement.
know that that was the deposed captain when he first showed
Oh,
up?
yeah, I did.
Oh, okay.
I did. Absolutely did. But I'm just saying, I knew he was a captain, but I like that the kids, the reason that they trusted him at first was because they thought he was a Jedi.
Right.
Because he's
And
force, because
although,
he is force sensitive.
as we've been shown in the series, being force sensitive doesn't necessarily
They
mean
make
that
you
you're
a
a Jedi. Right.
Oh,
And
but
the
these are
kids,
kids.
yeah, and they only had
Yeah.
their stories. And so I thought that was really cute. And I enjoyed that. And I think the episode we get to the owl woman who is getting their coordinates. And she's like, do not trust this
Trust.
dude. Like literally every single person that they meet that already knows Jude Law's character is like, do not trust him. And the kids are like, did you say we shouldn't trust him or should we
Well,
trust him?
they make a valid point, which is he's the one helping them get closer to home.
Right.
So if I don't know that kids are sophisticated enough to say we can use him even if we don't trust him. But essentially, he's the one that's helping them get closer to home.
Right.
Also, he does go out of his way to save them on various occasions
Yes.
when he could have just like left one or the or another of them behind. It would have been easier. And
Yeah.
he instead he goes back and does things. So
Yeah.
it does make it does give them reasons to wonder.
Right. And I like that they keep that for as long as possible where he's on that line. You don't know which way he's going to go. So I thought that was pretty good. But let's move on.
I was
So
pleasantly surprised, though, and I will agree with what Allison and Malik have said. It is definitely it is space Goonies, and
yeah.
I finally watched Goonies. I was overseas when it came out, and when I did, I'm like, this is a kids' movie, and it's not for me. So I don't have this attachment to it like some people who are younger than I do. But for the most part, casting decisions and some production design character decisions aside, overall, it's working. The kids are good. That's the thing. If the
The kids
kids
are
had been
very good.
terrible, it would not work at all. But the kids are pretty good. And Neil, it is a little off-putting, but eventually
You get used to it.
you get used to it. And the actor, but I don't know how they're pulling it off.
Because it's not actually an animatronic head, it's actually CG. They have little dots on the kid's face when so the kids when they're all acting together, it's that kid with dots all over
They're
his
relating
face.
to the actual kid.
Yeah.
I'm
Okay.
looking forward to the
It's
behind
just
the
it
scenes
looks
with
like an
them.
animatronic head is the thing. It looks very Jim Henson-y, you
I
know?
know, but I was just clarifying. It's I get what you're saying. I was just clarifying, but let's move on. I'm
Muppets
enjoying
in space.
I'm
They've done
enjoying
that.
it a lot, and I was just surprised how much I'm enjoying it. So I guess I'm a kid at heart. Yay.
I am withholding my smart comment on
Thank you.
that
I saw you had to restrain
topic.
yourself. All right. Next up, we're going to talk shrinking, and we're going to talk about episodes 9 and 10. And Malik, why don't you tell us where we
Well, I mean, there are multiple storylines going on here. Actually, no, I'll say the storylines, but I actually want to say something about where we are in the season for Shrinking. So I have thought Shrinking is a pretty good show all the way along. Some episodes are weaker than others, some are stronger than others. But 9 and 10 in particular, I felt like both the writers and the actors were having so much fun. And because of that, I had so much fun watching those two episodes in particular. So this isn't like I hated the show and then it got better. I already liked the show and then it got better. That was my overall feeling about episodes 9 and 10. There were a number of storylines that were happening. One of those storylines have to do with I'm on the wrong page to get my names out.
Gabby,
Make sure.
are you sure?
I always talk about Jessica Williams, but Gabby's character. So Gabby's character finds out that her sister is going to join the army, and she actually gets railroaded by her friends to help her accept that. But the bigger problem is her mother assumes that she's going to come live with Gabby, and Gabby They don't do this as much in the early part of the season, but in this episode, they're really trying to establish that she has a hard time saying no and standing up for herself. So she allows her mother to think that she's going to let her live with her. And by the end, she gets up enough courage to tell her mom, no, you can't stay here. And her mom does not take it well. So it ends up being, you know, sometimes they say, oh, what's your worst fear that can happen? Imagine that, and then you can face the thing. Well, her worst fear actually occurs, which is her mom is not at all understanding. And it's like, I think you need to leave now. It's pretty cold-blooded, which is nice because everything up to that is funny and humorous and great. And we think they kind of set us up to think all she needs to do is stand up for herself and everything will be okay. And it turns out it's not okay, which is a nice reversal in terms of that storyline. There's another storyline, and I might be mixing 9 and 10, but there's another storyline that it's the daughter's birthday.
Alice.
Alice. It's Alice's birthday, and there's a thing about there's a nice gotta look at my names again. So both Liz and Gabby want to help Alice celebrate her
Oh,
birthday.
and she puts them
There's
on the clock. She puts them on
this
the
great
clock.
scene where they're negotiating what's gonna happen. And it's like it's so cool because it's like, okay, here's my offer. We get this much time. Okay, well, here's my counter. And then Liz and Gabby are like, what do you think? Well, it's not what I want, but let's take it. It's so funny. And I think it's both a demonstration of the love they have for each other, but it also just the humor that they take in figuring out how much you're gonna let me love you this day. And she's like,
You're
you
right.
get to love me this much on that
45
day.
minutes. 45 minutes.
Yes. So I just really loved those moments. Overall, what are, there's the other storyline about the adoption. Brian and his
Brian and his
husband
husband.
have a whole thing about, oh, we want a mixed race baby, which is a funny joke. They never actually, I thought they were going to go into it a little bit, but it's just a thing about white people wanting mixed race babies is the joke. And so they have their whole journey of meeting with the prospective mother for the adoption, which, and that scene by itself is just both heartwarming and incredibly funny. So without just kind of summarizing what's happening, I will just say that for me, episodes 9 and 10 are like the best version of the show, which is already a good show.
Right. What's confusing for me is I've seen the next two episodes, which I think are better than those two
Which are
episodes.
better?
And
Oh, wow.
I was like, were they that
This show, they won the AFI, the American Film Institute Award for Program of the Year. They acknowledged 10 television shows and 10 films, and they're one of the 10. And they were not season one, but this, for me, season two is where this
is way
cast,
better. Yeah.
individually, they're all great actors, but they really gel as an ensemble cast this year. There's no weak links in it. The fact that they gave Ted McGinley a full-on storyline instead of just letting him breeze in, make a snarky remark and leave,
Oh
or a funny
yeah, his
remark
story
and
was it's
leave.
great. I have to say that also, as good as I think Harrison Ford has been his entire career, and I've loved Harrison Ford, this is the best I've ever seen Harrison Ford.
He's quite good in this.
And I was like, this is incredible. He's how old? Like he is not a
He's
young
80.
he and this is by far the best Harrison Ford performance I've ever like he has made me cry. He has made me laugh. He has made me do all these things that I have never seen him do in any other role. And I am highly impressed. And yeah, if you thought these episodes were good, Malik, wait for it. The
Yeah,
next two are
11
going to
and
be
12.
11 and 12 are going to be like, hold my
211
beer.
and 212 are terrific, and you're gonna need have Kleenex near for 12
Hey man,
because
I don't do Kleenex. I just do the Denzel single tear, man. I just let the single tear drop. That's all
that's
I
fantastic. But yeah, the so I'm glad we had you talk about it because I was like, wait, what happened in
allow.
nine and
The number
ten?
of social media posts after 212 dropped was insane. I
Yeah, just
mean,
don't get
on
online.
Threads and on Instagram, people were just like. And a lot of it's for Harrison Ford, but a lot of it's for the show in general.
Yeah, Harrison
Oh,
Ford knocked it out
okay.
the park. That's all I gotta say.
I
All right,
look forward to it.
All right, next up, we're going to talk about the agency, and we're purely taking on this show. I mean, it seems intriguing, but generally speaking, when I decided to watch the agency, I was like, okay, we got Fassbender, we got Jeffrey Wright, and we got Richard Gere. And I was like, all right, I'm in. I'm going to check this out.
No Jodie Turner Smith,
Sorry,
Rob?
Jodie. I love Jodie. Sorry. I love Jodie. She's in everything right now. I can't remember all the things she's in.
Seriously.
But the Fassbender's our way into the show, and he's the star, and he's coming off of 6 years of being undercover, and they pulled him out with like 48-hour notice, so he had to like tell everybody bye like immediately, and that basically does stuff to your psyche when you have to do that. And so they have these teams that are just like following him. He has to have mandatory psych evaluation, and he hasn't seen his daughter in 6 years. And he's just got all these things happening, and at the same time, you have this woman he's had this relationship with for we're not quite sure how long of that 6 years he was with her, but you have this other character who just miraculously, like, oh, you're in London, I'm in London too, and you're just like,
What a coincidence.
well, before that though, I mean,
go
I
ahead.
think it's important enough to the plot. So she's his love interest when he's embedded. His agency expects that. They know about her and they're like, how you doing with saying goodbye to her? He is supposed to cut off all communication with her once he leaves. So for the first notice that something is wrong with him in terms of him doing what he's supposed to is that he finds a way to get in touch with her after he gets back to London when he's not supposed to.
Well, that was because there
And
was a
then
bombing. There was a bombing at her school, and he wanted to
he
make
was
sure
worried
she,
about her.
yeah, he
Yes.
was
Wanted to
worried
make
to
sure
make
she
sure
was
she was alive. Yeah,
Yeah,
same,
but
yeah.
he also, so yes. And then you get that coincidence, hey, I'm in London. Oh, you're in London too, which
What are the odds?
for a spy who has been undercover and trained by the CIA, that he doesn't immediately suspect something and treat her like an operative is boggling the mind to me. And I think to me, it almost suggests that the relationship is lust, not love, because
Well, come on.
I don't know what else gets in the mind of a CIA operative that he doesn't look at that coincidence and immediately have a problem. So I just wanted to point up that there's two things that happens. He contacts her when he's not supposed to. Then she shows up in his city right after he's been extracted, and he's like, "All right, let's meet." It's wild.
He makes so many mistakes at the beginning of this thing.
He does, which
He makes a
makes you
lot of
wonder.
mistakes right through this thing.
I'm just saying that the first mistake leads to the others. So,
I was
anyway.
wondering personally, is that because of the source material? Are they following that construction because of the source material?
I don't
Because
know. I don't know. I'm not familiar. I know it comes from there was a French
French
series that this
show.
is based on, and I'm not familiar with the series.
But
I never
it's,
saw it.
I mean, while he was embedded, I'm think and part of it's because Jodie Turner Smith has been in two other shows I've seen this year. So, or last year. So I'm naturally kind of suspicious of her character. It's just and plus you're
She
not
was
going to
in this
cast.
show, and now she's in this show. She's everywhere. She's a spy.
But yeah, I agree with Malik. It's like, dude, you are doing everything wrong. My issue, I just watched these two episodes yesterday. I thought episode one was a lot of table setting, not a lot of narrative, forward
Movement.
plot line. For me, episode two is where, okay, now we're into now we're on, Harriet Sansom Harris arrives, love her, and we get this, they're trying to figure out, is this dude working for us? Or is he working for us and working for them? We need to figure it
Oh,
out.
the Russian guy.
The Russian dude. And we get to see Fassbender, do something cool
Do
and
his
show that
job
he
as he's
is
a
good at aspects of his job, aside from by the end of the episode, he visits the college where she's attending the symposium. She ain't there. And then talks to the woman afterwards. Oh, yes, she used it to expedite her visa into the country. It's like, oh, yeah. Completely above board.
I think you hit on something, Tom, because at first, not at first, after watching the two episodes, I'm like, How good is he at what he does? He doesn't
Right.
seem to be very good. Now, the thing he does to trick the Russian guy to make him think that he got kidnapped by actual Russians, that was like, oh, he's good at this. But everything involving himself, he seems horrible at it, which is another thing. His Jeffrey Wright plays his boss at the CIA,
Love Jeffrey Wright.
and who I love, by the way. But his character is like, you have these processes to tail people who are re-entering because they are potential threats. He keeps losing his tail, showing up at hotels for the one. He's doing all of these things, and Jeffrey Wright is basically like, oh, I'll cover for you. But
No, he said, I'll give you this one. He said, I'll give you one.
yeah, and I that makes Jeffrey Wright look bad at his job. That there's a reason why you're following your operatives who come home, because
Right.
they're more likely to be compromised. So that he is allowing him this pass when he's actively losing his tails is just a little mind-boggling. Last thing I'll say before I turn pass the mic, the psychologist who is debriefing
Oh,
him,
right.
I love her and their scenes together. Because she doesn't have direct authority over him, and he's trying to turn the tables on her. And that little cat and mouse stuff that's happening between the two of them, I think is really fun to watch.
Allison, your thoughts? You haven't spoken yet.
Yeah, I well, the problem with I have with the show is that the only way they seem to be able to get the plot to move forward is by having people behave in stupid ways. I mean, as has already been pointed out so far, Fassbender's character is like a walking red light. I mean, he's just flashing warnings, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm a potential threat. And he just everything he does is nonsensical. And the fact that he's doing it makes him look like unhinged. And the fact that everybody else around him should be trained to see these warning signs, and nobody is,
Well, the
just
psychiatrist
makes them
is.
look. That's the only one. She's the only one who looks at him, and you could tell that she has got his number, and she knows, what's going on, but she can't prove it, and she has no real authority.
Authority,
She
right.
can talk to other people about what's going on with him, but she can't do anything herself. And that's very convenient for the story because then he keeps, going off
Losing his
and
tail.
doing all this nonsense. But all the people who should be in a position to stop him are just letting him
Well, I think
slide, and it just makes him look incompetent.
it's because too, they're showing him actually doing a good job on the bigger story or plot with the Russians and the missing agent, all that stuff. He's doing a good job with that. And so they're all distracted by him doing such a good job that they're letting other stuff slide, which they should not be.
No, they should not. And it, like I said, it doesn't make their characters look smart or capable. And I also want to bring in, there's like a subplot that they've got running through this whole thing with that female agent who
Oh, right.
just started. And I'm already at the most recent episode watching this thing, and I still can't figure out how she figures into the larger plot.
I don't know that either. Like she's got they introduced this agent that I think in the second episode he starts to help train her because they're like she's gonna go on a mission. By the time you go later, she's actually on a mission, and I understand what Allison's saying. I don't understand how those two stories
No, they don't really fit together. They
they
were
don't
together
dovetail.
for they had a conversation. Okay, you're training her. That lasted 5 minutes, maybe not even that. And then after that, they were in separate stories, and I kept waiting for them to dovetail.
But
And
that's
as yet, they
later.
still haven't.
That's later. We'll talk
So,
about that
well, but what
later.
I'm saying is, I just feel like whenever we go to her story, I feel like my time is being wasted because I don't see how she
They
plays into
connect.
the larger story.
Well, maybe
Yeah.
it will. I
I
don't
did
know.
like the big action set piece at the end of 102, where Jeffrey Wright's brother-in-law, that
Oh, that was
they
good.
had this coded conversation, and then he gets caught out. He gets caught on the carpet by Richard Gere and says, "I don't even know what that means." But they figure out something's off, and so it's a we see what a messy extraction looks like.
Yep. That was a
Yeah,
lot good.
that is a nice sequence. That's true. I think overall on this show, one is in general, they have incredible actors throughout the entire cast. They have a setup that feels like it should be really interesting, but yes, they appear to be progressing the plot forward by having smart people do stupid things, which is,
Which is never good.
yes.
All right, well, let's move on. We'll be trying to catch up on that show. Next up, we're trying to catch up on Silo. We're going to cover episodes 3, 4, 5, and 6 of Silo, which is a lot, but that's still behind the current. And I don't I want to be I want to get I want to catch up to current, basically. So episode 3 and 4 of Silo, Tom, help me out. Which ones are those?
Episode 3, isn't that where we finally meet
Oh,
Solo and
right.
Silo?
Solo finally
Right.
opens the door.
Yeah,
I
he
mean,
finally, yes.
we hear Steve Zahn's very, very identifiable voice, and then we see him and he's got like full Robinson Crusoe, shaggy beard.
Well, you know, he's been stuck in that vault for a while, and what I and he finally comes out and they talk, and he is very strange, but he then tells her what he needs from her. Is that in episode 3?
So
No,
first,
not
it's what he can
yet,
do
not
for
yet.
her.
Okay, go ahead. You
Right.
guys
So
tell
first
me.
is what she's trying to, oh, actually, this is, I think, one of the most interesting aspects of that episode, which is he's telling her a little bit of the history of his vault and about the people who left. And she's like, well, why did they leave? Oh, well, somebody didn't clean. And you see her putting together the pieces. She's like, I didn't clean. Does that mean people in my vault are going to try to go outside? So I love how they show her putting together those pieces that I didn't even actually get it until she put it together, that all of a sudden she realizes her mission has to be to get back to the vault so that they don't all go out and
Silo.
kill
Get
10,000.
radiated.
The silo, sorry. Yeah. So I really like the way they did the storytelling there for her to put the pieces together by listening to his story. That I think that's one of the strongest elements of the story. The other thing that I think is really strong is the judge comes out of her stupor and is a full-blown character
He's
who, as
fantastic.
both a character as in an actor, I love. I'm like, why did you have her in hibernation for all of this
Don't
time?
get too attached to her, Belize.
See, that's a sign when they start to really focus on a character that they've never focused on before. It's like, oh, they're not going to be
But
around long.
I have to say, I didn't see that coming, mainly
Oh,
because.
dude, as soon as he says, I want to cook you dinner.
Yeah, I saw it coming then. But I
Come
just want to say her arc from when she wakes up out of her stupor, starts actively getting involved in what's happening, it's clear that she actually knows more. She's
on.
better at this than the head
The
of IT,
mayor.
who's now the mayor.
The mayor.
She's actually better at this because she's not bound by the code. She's not, it's, I mean, it's biblical, of course. She's like, yes, that's the code, but here's what's happening in front of me, and here's what you should do. And you can imagine if he actually followed her advice, he would have been better off in terms of maintaining order. But because the mayor has to live by this code, is also part of why he feels he has to poison her to get her out of the picture. But she is such a revelation in the leading up to all of that.
And meanwhile, because the mayor is a manipulative, you know what,
Son of a gun.
Mechanical has requested a meeting with the judge. So he makes sure when Mechanical finally gets there, she's dead, and he can say, they killed her.
That was crazy.
Which leads to an interesting, so the people, the proletariat in this show are very similar to Shakespeare's citizens. I'm thinking specifically in Julius
Julius
Caesar, where they
Caesar.
talk about how the crowd is so fickle. This crowd, not only are they fickle, they are so easily led that it boggles the mind a little bit, unless, of course, you look at our recent elections and you begin to appreciate it.
Yeah, let's not
That's
go
the
there.
yeah, you know, just can stop wondering right there.
But But it is the crowd is so easily led in this show that it's almost too easy to manipulate the crowd. And so the only real challenges are between the few thinking people in each area, the few thinking mechanicals, the few thinking porters, the few thinking judicial people, the few thinking the sheriff doesn't actually have any thinking people. The sheriff's department is so gullible because it's
Except
led.
for the sheriff.
Well, no, he's the most gullible one from my perspective.
You think so?
He, yes, he is so gullible that it takes him all the episodes that we just watched to finally figure out, hey, maybe something weird is going on here. He
Well,
is.
you got to remember he's kind of preoccupied with the whole baby thing.
Well,
Yeah.
not really.
I mean,
No,
he
I
kisses
don't
a
give him baby
baby.
credit. No.
Yeah,
No.
no, he's just really, he's a true believer.
Yes, he
And
believes in the
exactly.
pact.
That was
He
exactly what I was
believes in
thinking
the
of.
pact.
Yes.
And because of that, he believes in the mayor and believes in the judicial, and he believes that everybody will follow the rules. And then when people aren't following the rules, he's flabbergasted. He's like, but I don't understand. The pact says this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
So,
because
I
he
mean,
filters everything through his own almost fanatical belief.
yes, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh,
So,
there are going to be some conference papers written about this show when it's finished.
yeah.
And
So,
I've got to give props to Graham Yost, who is also one of the showrunners on Slow Horses, is one of the showrunners. He created this show for TV.
oh, really?
Dude's a great storyteller.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he does not have smart people doing stupid things. He has smart people doing smart things, and he has average people doing average things, which Billings is basically pretty average. I mean, he seems to have a moral core, but he's not wise, which is why he can be manipulated to a point. And even beyond that point, I've seen I'm current, so.
I think that there's also, as far as the crowd being manipulated, remember that they are living in kind of this weird eternal now. They've been completely denied any history whatsoever. They don't know what came before the silo. They don't even know what came before X date, in the silo.
You
So
haven't heard
they.
the litany recently, though, in season two.
No,
Oh,
no.
about
If you
You
say you want to
know,
go
we
out,
only know
but
that this day is not
not
that day.
that day.
Yeah,
Yeah.
right.
But oh,
But I mean,
okay.
they have no basis on which to say, well, I don't think that this makes sense, because they only know what they're told at any given time, and the rest of the time they're too busy running up and down those stairs and just trying to stay alive. That would exhaust anybody. I'm tired just watching that
I
then.
want to bring up the Lucas character
Lucas Kyle.
who by the end of episode 5 or 6, he gets made the IT
He becomes
Shadow
I T
because,
Shadow.
like, as the judge is dying, she tells him there's this huge secret that he doesn't know about that is the reason why she left IT, and it was so devastating that she was like, you cannot make decisions without this information. And then he's like, well, what is it? And she goes, well, I'm not gonna tell you. You killed me. Screw you, dude. And then she just dies. And so he recruits Lucas to figure it out. But what bothers me about Lucas, because we talk about smart characters, medium characters, Lucas is kind of, I would say, book smart, except they don't give them books. But he's smart in a
He's
different way.
intuitive.
He's
He's
intuitive,
intuitive.
right? But he can't intuit that as soon as he gives IT, the mayor, the
As soon as he gives
information.
the mayor what he wants, he's going back to the mines, baby.
Exactly. I was like, dude, you're only valuable to him to crack this code, and then you're done. And I keep waiting for him to make that leap in logic, you know?
Yeah,
Well,
but
I'm
you
not sure.
actually. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I'm not sure that he hasn't made that leap. I think he in he's in a position where if he doesn't say yes to this, he gets put back in the
Oh,
mines immediately.
I'm not
So
saying that. Yeah.
I think long term he's hoping that maybe he can keep being useful so that he doesn't get put back in the mines.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he's really going on. It's like, a moment by moment thing because he doesn't really have an option. He can't tell him, okay, well, you know, but if I do this for you, you know, then you're just going to screw me later. So I'm not going to do anything now. It's like, then he'd just be put in the mine right that minute. He'd be, you know, done. So I think he's just kind of desperately going, you know, moment by moment, day by day.
I can't remember in what episode do we find out that the code or whatever says, if a cleaning fails, prepare for war. Was that episode two?
That was three. That was two or three. Yeah, because it's when the mayor looks at the pack. You see him at the beginning. He's like flipping through the book, like frantically trying to figure out what he should do. And it was like, if somebody fails to clean, prepare for war. But it didn't even say, what happens if they go over the hill? Like, that's a whole different other thing. Like, he's like, holy crap, what do I do?
Yeah. I just also want a couple of things just to mention, just moments that I think are just really excellent in the show. So between Bernard, the mayor, and the judge, Mary Meadows, what is her name?
Mary Meadows, yeah.
Yeah. Two moments between them. One is when he's taking her measurements for the suit that he's promising her that he's never planning to give her.
Right.
That is one of the most intimate scenes I've seen on television, and everybody's clothes are on. But just the care and the touching with him taking her measurements with the tape measure, I was blown away by that moment. The second one, again, with those same two actors, is when she understands she's been poisoned and he gives her those 3D goggles, those virtual reality goggles, and he's guiding her through looking at birds and squirrels or whatever she's looking at. It is so beautiful, even though he has just murdered her. So I just thought those moments, by the writing of it, by the acting of it, even how it was shot, was just some of the best moments I've seen on television.
I am 100% convinced that he was really in love with her,
and
he just never figured out, and she was not interested, but he never figured out a way to really get her to understand how much he cared about her, which was why he's then very angry at Sims, because he knows that Sims set him up to kill her. And so he's got all this anger at Sims. You made me kill her. I was like, dude, you could have figured out another way. Like, you didn't have to fall. You saw the trap. You knew that Sims set a trap for you. You saw it, you understood it, and you still walked right into it and did exactly what he wanted. I was like, you could have been smarter instead of just being mad at him. But anyway.
Speaking of Sims, right, his wife has also become a whole person in these last several episodes. And she is, I'm not fully sure of her agenda. I just know it's interesting to watch her go after her.
She is what I would call a free radical.
She is on her own side.
She is doing her thing.
Yes.
And not talking to her husband about it. It's interesting. I think we talked sometime last year about Common not being that great of an actor, but more of a presence.
Yeah.
He's starting to stretch a little bit on this show. This show is making him stretch a little bit.
And I think part of it is, too, his wife, they're showing his wife is so much smarter than him and better than him and like everything that she does. And he's feeling like he's getting left behind by everybody. He got put in the position of judicial, which has no power. So he can't do even the stuff he was good at, and he's not smart enough to figure out all the other pieces. He can't figure out how to do anything in a position that should allow him to do something.
Yeah.
So,
but let's jump back to the other silo with Juliet and Solo before we wrap
up. Before we finish. Yeah.
Obviously, Juliet needs Solo's help to figure out to either fix her suit or get another suit to go outside. But he, of course, wants something in return. He wants her to fix the pump.
Right, so that the water drains at the bottom of the silo. I don't like that story as well, because it feels like the pacing and Juliet's story is so much slower than what's going on the other silo. Like, I was like, how much time is passing?
Plus at this point, it's just the two of them. there,
It's
whereas
just
you have this whole
slow.
world of characters in the side, in the other
I know,
side.
I get it. It's just so slow. And I was like, are we gonna take the whole season for her to get back? Like, oh my God, it just
Oh, for
feels
her to get
so.
back, probably.
I
Yeah.
know, but it feels so slow.
See,
So
for
what's
me, it does. It feels like everything. So much is happening in the other silo that when we
exactly?
move over to Juliet and Solo, I feel like I'm catching my breath. And so I like just concentrating on the two of them and the problem that they have at hand. And I'm okay with that because also we're getting information from him. She's not paying attention to nine tenths of it because she's so focused on
Because
what she
he's just
wants to
going,
do.
like this.
Well, he's had no
Although,
one to talk to in literally decades. And he's the only one who knows all kinds of stuff because he's been in this room with all the knowledge. And he's just dying to get it out, which is hilarious. And she just wants to, get out as fast as she possibly can and be focused on that. But
one thing,
I do like the dynamic between the two of them.
they've kind of established is even though he's babbling a lot, she is, even though she doesn't have his full attention, she is catching the very specific and pertinent
Little
information.
bits.
Yeah. Well,
So.
so let me ask you this, because I'm trying to figure out if I'm reading this right. Earlier on, when he's in the classroom with the little girl that we're talking about, and she's like, "Well, this kid would have been, in third or fourth grade. How did you know her?" Does she not understand that he was a child when this thing
No,
happened?
because
she
he's
does
been
not.
he's lying. He's been lying this whole
Well, no,
time.
that's
No,
different.
that's not
That's
it.
different.
She does not
He
know how long ago this
That's
disaster
correct.
happened.
It's the
She does not,
timeline thing.
she hasn't put together yet, although she's on the cusp of it when she realizes the age thing in the classroom. She hasn't figured out that he was just a little kid when he got put in that room, and
So
that's how long it's been since then.
I think that's an interesting plot point. That point feels like it's taking a long time for her to put
It's
that
put
piece
together,
together. She
right?
actually figured out that he's lied about who he is faster,
Right.
which is, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I kind of agree with both Libya and Allison on that. I understand having the space to breathe, and I think that those two actors are good enough that they can hold scenes by themselves. It does feel like it's just the contrast in the pacing. It does feel like it's taking quite a while for us to get to the story. One other piece I do like about that relationship is that he essentially crossed a line by what is it called? Oh, there's a word for it. He makes her, he forces her to do something without her consent, essentially. So up until now, they have been helping one another either through agreement or bargaining or negotiation. And in the last episode, he essentially says, "I'm not going to enable anything you're doing. I'm going to make you help me before you do your next thing." So I think that's an interesting line that he's crossed in terms of consent or coercion rather than how they've been dealing with one another thus far. So I'm interested to see how that affects how things play out in the next several episodes.
That goes real quick. I'm gonna real quick, which is she goes between being scared of him and feeling sorry for him back and forth. And I'm like, pick a lane. Like, you can
Well,
be, because he
but you.
yells and freaks out, and she's all of a sudden she gets all like, oh my God, he's so scary. But then she feels sorry for him. I'm like, pick, like, which are you gonna be? Like, that's all. That bothers me. But go ahead.
In the character's defense, I want to go back to something Allison said, which is very apropos. There's in the other silo, is that 18?
Yeah.
There
Yes.
is no, they've been robbed of their history.
Right.
In 17, she doesn't know the history. And as she starts to piece together, that's going to address. Are you caught up, Libya? Are you okay? Because some of the things that we pieced together, I've had tons of other stuff going on right now, but when you get to other episodes and she makes the same conclusions that y'all talked about now, for me, that kind of justifies why her attitude towards him is because he's having tantrums.
Yes, I
Yes.
get it.
He is. He's straight up having
And
tantrum.
a tantrum, a child tantrum coming from a guy who's about 55 years old and looks like a homeless person is really scary. But I think on some other level, she understands that even if she doesn't know the age thing specifically, she understands that he cognates on the level of a
Level.
child.
Yep.
And so
He has the
that's why
emotional
she keeps
intelligence,
going
which.
back. There's a reason to be scared of him because she doesn't know what he can do, really unhinged. But there's also a reason to feel bad for him because she understands that there's a very childlike nature to this guy. He's sort of arrested at age 10 somehow.
And you don't treat a dangerous person like they're dangerous, right?
True.
That's
Oh,
actually
no.
more likely to bring out the danger. So you
Yep.
have to actually treat them like they're safe, because that's
Yep.
the way to try to get them to remain behaving in a safe way.
Calm
And
them down.
Zahn is such genius casting for this, and
Oh,
evidently
God,
he
yeah.
watched the show season one, and so when they approached him for the role, he's like, oh, that's kind of, because they said, we kind of wrote this character with you in mind, but perfect casting, because he can
Yeah.
play the danger, but he can also play the childish,
Yeah, he's
childlike
good. Like,
naivety.
I agree. He's good. Like, I'm not agreeing, disagreeing with that at all. But let's wrap this up. I think we're all saying thumbs up for
Oh,
Psylocke.
yeah.
Oh, yeah,
And
this is great.
then hopefully in the next one, we will be up to date where everybody else is. So, yeah. If you guys have any questions or comments, you can leave them at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Listen to us on sci-fi.radio, Indianapolis, iTunes, and YouTube. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.